Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good afternoon, Upstate. Welcome to Upstate Outdoors. You're listening to Philip Gentry and Boat Girl.
Hey. Happy weekend.
Yeah, happy weekend. We do this every Saturday.
Yeah, we're here again.
Yeah, we're here again. And I tell you what, I have been excited about this show all week long. I can't hardly stand it. Yep. And Reesman, if you're listening to 106.3 WORD, you heard the promo, as poor as it was, about our guest today. And I won't talk about that yet because that's going to be during the second hour. But let me do a rundown of what we have on the show.
Yes.
Because we got a whole bunch of stuff in one show. So we're going to start out talking about the Upstate Outdoors blog. And we're going to kind of set the stage for those of you who have not heard about chronic wasting disease. We're going to kind of set the stage about chronic wasting because we got some more information that we want to give you that kind of expands that.
Right.
And
PG's got some good info on that.
Yep. And then you've heard me talking about shooting the mile-long range at the Clinton House Plantation. Been talking about that all summer long. And we have got Mike Sexton, who is the shooting instructor for the Clinton House Plantation. Mike shoots competitively. And looking forward to having Mike on the show and talking about shooting a mile. And then, on top of that, before we end up the first hour, South Carolina Department of Natural Resources, I don't think they changed the dates, but we're going to confirm the dates for dove season and talk a little bit of dove season before we get into the break for the first hour.
Right.
And then during the second hour, Boat Girl's going to bring us the Roadkill Cafe. Did we ever put a name on what we're going to call that recipe?
Captain Morgan Quail.
Captain Morgan Quail. There you go. So
just like it is what it sounds like it is.
Exactly what it sounds like. I'll have to tell that story after we get done. But yes, it is Captain Morgan and Quail.
And Quail.
And then, as promised, we're going to talk about DNR released some new deer regulations, which basically bans the use of urine-based deer attractants. And that kind of goes back to the CWD.
And we're going to tell you why.
Yeah, we'll tell you why and get into that. And then we're going to have old King of the Swamp himself, old Troy Landry from Swamp People, is going to be our guest here on Upstate Outdoors.
Kind of a big deal.
Yeah, Eddie. No, it's a huge big deal. He's going to be here a week. Let's see, the second is a Friday, right?
It's next Friday.
Next Friday. He'll be here next Friday down at the Anderson Civic Center with the Outdoor Dream Foundation. And we got lucky enough to get hold of him a week in advance. So we're going to talk to Troy. And then we will jump into our calendar of events.
This week has got a couple.
Yep. And then a parting shot. I was really looking for something to do with an alligator, but I found the next best thing, which is a kid who's fishing and almost gets snatched off the back of a boat by a great white shark.
Okay.
So
almost.
With a salute to our buddy Chip Michael of.
Isn't Shark Week coming up soon?
Yeah,
should probably. Should we have saved that for Shark Week?
No.
Nah.
There's okay. Always going to be alligator, Florida man, shark, Bigfoot. So you just.
We'll just find something.
The parting shot is the parting shot. You just take that however it comes.
That's right.
So we got to do a chigger report.
I do not.
We were talking last week. Boat Girl and I went down to the hunt club and we were working on stuff. And
I took every precaution possible. But
you only got two.
I only got two, but I was hoping for zero.
I got one. I got one chigger bite. And man, I tell you what, I doused her down in diatomaceous earth.
Glad I'm sitting here today and didn't get poisoned by pesticides.
That's the thing, because diatomaceous earth is not it's a natural pesticide. It's actually a ground fossilized plankton or something like that.
PG, the science guy.
Yeah, and you got to go. you got to go find somebody at the Lowe's or the Home Depot.
And they still don't know what it
the
is.
The first guy that I found
he gave you the blank stare.
Was it? I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
You got diatomaceous earth? I don't know what that is. And then Boat Girl says, well, it probably would be where the pesticides are.
And so, then we walked around for 20 minutes trying to find the pesticides.
Yeah.
So until I don't go in there that
we
much.
We found that, and then we found the diatomaceous earth. And it's not a whole lot. That used to be
$6 for a
whole
bag.
To be, was it six or eight?
I don't know.
It used to be seven dust was diatomaceous earth. And then when they, I don't know, whatever.
But now
I don't
if you
know
read the back of the label on seven dust, it says it's poisonous. And
yeah.
Blah,
seven
blah,
dust
blah,
used
blah.
To be diatomaceous earth because somewhere there's a big old wad of fossilized plankton and ain't no bugs around it. And somebody said, what if we just grind this stuff up and sell it as pesticide?
Who in the world thought of that?
Maybe there was a big pile of it somewhere and there wasn't no bugs around it.
Yeah. It worked pretty good with the chiggers. I'm going to try to refine that this week when we go back down to, you know.
Yeah.
Do some more bush hogging and stuff.
Got a bow stand put up. And
the tractor's fixed.
Yeah, Lamont's back in working order.
Everything, knock on wood. We had a hard time a few weeks ago. Everything we owned was broke.
Yep.
Four-wheeler, the tractor, the truck.
Actually, I broke everything in 1 week.
Everything was broke. And now, finally, I feel like we got everything fixed. The tractor did good. The four-wheeler did good. It's like, okay, we can breathe. For a minute now.
Yeah. And a little bit of a cool front this week, which is kind of nice. I don't think it's going to last through the weekend, but maybe so. Maybe we can get down there and do some.
Yeah, because it was
do some plowing and planting
weekend.
And bush hogging and, you know, checking straps and doing all that. And
So the work begins.
Yeah. So
but I'm excited about deer season.
We work through the middle part of the day because Boat Girl ain't getting up early.
No.
You forget that.
Sorry I made you work in the heat of the day.
That's all right. It wasn't too bad. We worked in the shade.
Yeah.
Back in there doing
that's where
stands.
The chiggers came from was the woods, not out in the field.
Yeah. Yeah. So man, I tell you, just you know, with all the stuff we've got today and all that, it's just man, it's wrapping up. Normally you kind of think about the summertime being kind of the doldrums, not a whole lot to talk about. But man, there's been a lot of outdoor stuff to talk about this summer.
Yes.
You know, I mean, and not even getting into a fishing report hardly this week. I don't even think we got one, but the fishing has been pretty good too.
I have seen and heard.
Yeah. So,
of course, it's time for hunting right now. So, we did not fish last week at all.
No. Might have to change that this week. It might have to go fishing one day and then work on a deer club another day.
Yeah.
I'm
ready to put cameras out though.
Yeah. I don't know. The only thing I'm really concerned about, and people say, oh, I can't believe you hunt over corn. But, yeah, the price of corn is going to dictate whether or not I feel good
about
deer season.
That venison's going to be like $975 a pound this year.
Oh, yeah. Ain't it always, though, so you do what you do. Well, let's go to our break, and when we come back, I'm going to jump into the Upstate Outdoors blog, and we're going to kind of set stage for you. If you don't know about chronic wasting disease, and because we got some other stuff to talk about later on the show.
Awesome. Y'all stay with us. Got a great show today. 106.3 WORD.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let me cut this on. Well, the hunting season is about to emerge across the land. The
Getting ready.
This week, you know, when it was cool, man, it really reminded me. And one of the things, I'm a hunter. I love sitting in the woods. And one of the things that occurred this week was the cicadas kind of stopped because they love it when it's hot.
Yes.
And the crickets. I heard crickets for a few.
Did you?
Yeah, just a little bit. I don't know what the deal is, but, yeah, I was driving somewhere, had the window down at night coming in, and I heard the crickets. And I was like, oh, man. Deer season's coming. That's what always reminds me of deer season. But wrote the Upstate Outdoors blog about a very serious issue that does not yet involve South Carolina deer hunters, but it should. Even if you're just a casual deer hunter, chances are pretty good that you've heard the term chronic wasting disease, commonly referred to as CWD. CWD is a transmittable spongiform encephalopathy. That's a mouthful.
Wow.
That can occur among deer, elk, and moose populations. Now, since it was first documented in a captive mule deer in Colorado about 35 years ago, CWD has slowly spread to more than two dozen states and a number of Canadian provinces, and that's according to the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources. Now, in deer infected with CWD, here's what happens. They have these abnormal proteins called prions convert normal proteins to the abnormal proteins, typically in the central nervous system, but ultimately CWD kills the infected deer. So you don't want this infection that's eventually going to kill deer spreading from deer to deer.
Right.
Because CWD is transmitted from one deer to another via contact with saliva, urine, and presumably the feces or other bodily fluids of an infected deer. Now, uninfected deer can even contract the disease by ingesting soil, food, or water that came in contact with the bodily fluids of an infected deer. So basically, CWD is the deer version of mad cow disease.
Okay, I never thought about it like
if
that.
That's what it is if you're familiar with that.
Right.
Now, despite all the rhetoric, most South Carolina deer hunters are not concerned with CWD because no case of it has ever been documented in a South Carolina deer. And that's the way Charles Ruth, the deer project coordinator for the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources, likes it. He says, two things have helped us keep CWD out of South Carolina so far, said Ruth. First, we're geographically isolated from the areas where CWD originated, although states east of the Mississippi River have had documented cases. Tennessee just had one about a year ago, but it was on the far side. Out towards Memphis. The second is we have always been a closed-door state when it comes to the importation of captive deer.
Which is a very good thing.
Yeah. Ruth explained that many states where CWD has been identified first found the disease in a captive animal before later being found in a free-range deer. That's where they also found the disease. Now, Ruth further stated that there are no known treatments or cures for CWD. He said the incubation period for the disease is also problematic. It can take anywhere from a year to up to 5 years before the disease becomes apparent. Deer that have contracted CWD are often described as thin and sickly. The most obvious sign of CWD is progressive weight loss. And there's numerous behavioral changes have also been reported, including decreased social interaction, loss of awareness, and loss of fear of humans. Diseased animals also may exhibit increased drinking, urination, and excessive salivation. Now, while no cases of CWD being transmitted from deer to humans has ever been recorded, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends that people do not consume meat from an infected animal. Duh, you think? In an effort to further stem the possibility of the spread of CWD into South Carolina, and this is we'll talk about this a little bit more later on the show, the South Carolina State Legislature, at the urging of the Department of Natural Resources, recently enacted legislation banning hunters from using urine-based deer attractants.
Yes. Okay. We talked about that last week.
Yep. Now, these attractants or lures are made from the urine or scent organs of pen-raised deer, said Ruth. They're often produced by facilities that collect urine over a grate system, which doesn't prevent contamination from feces or saliva. Now, according to Ruth, these facilities, which are all of which are located outside of the state, cannot live test the animals for CWD. They have to kill the animal to test it. Nor can the urine products be cleansed of the disease without ruining the scent. If they heat it, then it doesn't smell like deer pee and deer don't want it. The only safe precaution is to ban them from use in the state. Now, Ruth said the department recognizes the legislation may not sit well with hunters who prefer to use these bottled scents to hunt deer, but added that there are alternatives available. One is the use of a synthetic scent, which many hunters claim work just as well as the natural. He also pointed out that it is permissible to use urine or scent glands that the hunter has harvested from a South Carolina deer. And then he wraps up by saying, some say it's a long shot contracting the disease through bottled scent. but we don't want to be in a situation where we find the disease in South Carolina on down the road and know that we didn't do everything that we could to prevent it from happening.
I agree with the DNR on this one.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, nobody panic. There's no CWD in this state. However.
And there's none in North Carolina either. There's,
right. There's,
not,
there's none close.
Tennessee is the closest. I don't think I've ever heard of it being in Georgia either.
No.
And he talks about us being.
I looked at a map.
Yeah.
On the internet of where CWD had been reported and how many cases. And yes, primarily, it is. They have. I think it was in the Northeast.
Yep.
And then I think there was two or three cases in Tennessee. I think that was on the other side of the
and
river.
And I know Mississippi has found several cases.
Mississippi
there.
Had a handful.
Yeah.
I just, nobody panic, but we can do our part in South Carolina to make sure that we do have a healthy deer population.
Yeah.
You know, I think the biggest thing, in my opinion, I'm obviously not a scientist, is transporting deer from other places.
Well, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. It's always been regulated / illegal.
Yes.
To transport the carcasses of any cervid. That's deer, you know, moose, elk, whatever,
right.
Into South Carolina for that very reason, you know, because a lot of folks go out west and, you know, they'll hunt. I think you can take the meat.
Yes.
If you have it processed out there, you can bring the meat back in, but you can't go kill a deer, you know, somewhere out
and
there.
And bring it back whole.
And then bring it back whole and have it processed here,
right.
Anything like that. So I want to go over the news release that DNR did, and I think we'll get into that during the second hour.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff packed into the show today, so I wanted to get that in to kind of lay it out so people aren't, oh, what's the big deal about CWD? It's not even here yet. So I wanted to lay the groundwork and done that. So let's go to our break now.
Yeah.
And then when we come back, we're going to talk to Mike Sexton.
Yes.
The shooting instructor.
We're going to learn about shooting.
Down at the Clinton House.
Y'all stay with us right here, 106.3 WORD.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, well, our next guest, if you've been listening to the promotions that we've been doing here on Upstate Outdoors for, gosh, I don't know, most of the summer, talking about shooting the long-range ranges and the mile-long range at the Clinton House Plantation. And I thought, hey, man, we need to get the instructor from the Clinton House. So we've got Mike Sexton with us on the phone. Mike, welcome to Upstate Outdoors.
Awesome. Thank you. It's a pleasure being on there.
Well, it's nice to be able to talk to somebody who could put a bullet in you from 1,000 yards away, you know.
Well, we hope that don't ever happen.
Yeah,
we do it for a fun sport and to have a good time. And there's so many people wanting to get out there now and getting into this sport and stretch it out there that it's growing rapidly. Long range shooting is the fastest growing sport in shooting sport in the United States.
That
right
is
now.
True.
And so how did you get into it, Mike?
Well, I started shooting competitively in the early 90s and shot in three gun. And in three gun, that's what I do. I'm a pro three gunner. And there's a lot of long range in it. I spent 20 years in the Marine Corps shooting, and it just one thing grew to another. And with it being the fastest growing shooting sport, it's just hard not to because it's very enjoyable. And it's something that doesn't apply a lot of physics to or physical abilities to it. It's enjoyable to go out there and be able to read the data, determine what you need, and hit a target a mile away.
Now, the cool thing was I remember when Mike Johnson down at the Clinton House was like, yeah, we're working on the 1,000-yard range. I was like, wow, 1,000-yard range. And then I guess he got bored with that, and I don't know where he came up with the idea to do a mile-long range. That's That's probably I don't know of any other long range range that's got that much distance on it.
Well, it's kind of my idea. I came down to the Clinton House about 8 years ago and asked Mike, could I have a place to practice competitively at? And he gave me some areas I compete. And then I said, hey, Mike, you know, we need to put in a 1,000-yard. It's getting popular. And we put it on one end of the property out there. And then we come back and he found a flat spot and he did all the work. And myself and a guy named Mark Link did the putting it together and getting the steel together. And then about a year and a half ago, I said, Mike, we got 2,000 acres here. I think we can shoot a mile. Just think, we'd be the only one in South Carolina. And so one thing led to another, and we found a spot we could do it, and the rest is history.
Well, and we've been promoting, you know, kind of shooting the mile-long course, but that's not something that just anybody can bring their, you know, 270 or 30-06 and come and do. What's involved in shooting that distance?
Well, one is understanding your firearm and the data behind it. You know, you can bring a hunting gun out there. We have shot the mile with a 224 Valkyrie. I was there today with Barrett Firearms, and we've shot it all away with a 50 cal, you know. So,
wow.
And anything in between, you can shoot it. Now, we don't allow 50 cal unless you're with a member of the Clinton House, but they can bring their 338s out there, but it's about putting together the data, putting it in the gun with the right ammo, not necessarily hunting ammo, but good, solid precision ammo, and figuring it out and hitting that. There's so many computers out there now, handhelds, Kestrels, 5x25 scopes, that people can get their hands on at a relatively good price. You don't have to spend $7,000 on anything anymore to come and hit the mile. You can spend $1,000 on a Ruger precision rifle, $1,000 on a scope, and $100 on a handheld Kestrel, and you can come and hit the mile any day you want to.
Wow. And that's, you know, in my experience, that the long range stuff was always, man, you got to have a $10,000 gun, and it's got to be made in a secret lab somewhere, you know, and it's amazing the type of accuracy that you can get out of, I won't say cheap equipment, but not as expensive equipment.
Regular person's equipment.
Well, well, I'll give you an example. I shoot competitive long range also. I'll be down in Blakely, Georgia in 2 weeks shooting a sniper match down there. I'm shooting a $3,000 rifle with a $3,000 scope on top of it. And I'm shooting competitively, and the gun is capable of shooting 3/8 MOA all the way out to 1,000 yards.
Wow.
So you don't have to have a $7,000 rifle like it used to be probably 3 or 4 years ago. You can buy a Ruger precision rifle, $1,000. You know, I'm not promoting that brand. I mean, they're a good brand and everything, but people can go out and buy a $1,000 gun and have no problem hitting 1,000 to a mile. Now, we also do training classes down there, long-range training classes. Myself and Mark do those. And then I do probably 2 or 3 a week private one-on-one training classes so people understand the equipment that they have.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask was, you know, if somebody – I mean, you don't just turn them loose shooting at a mile. You're going to give them some instruction and kind of let them know what's entailed.
That's correct. I'll be on the spotting scope calling wind for them to help them with wind calls, because at the Clinton House, most of the time we're dealing with 2 or maybe 3 different wind directions at a mile. You know, you also got to take in consideration the elevation of the earth and all these type things. And it's really not that complicated, but I help them figure it out, put them together a ballistics program, and then I help them and instruct them into the target.
So you could take a regular person like me, your average deer hunter, and explain the science behind the mile-long shooting.
That's correct.
So you can teach someone how to figure out the physics of how everything works at that kind of distance.
Take you, for example, as you said, you can go to some store out here, buy you a $1,000 rifle, a $1,200 scope. You can come and see me, spend the day with me, and I guarantee you before you leave, you'll be hitting a mile.
That's awesome.
Wow.
That is cool.
And so if I mean, so does Mike do any kind of rental? Like if somebody can't decide what kind of, you know, gun that they want to buy and do that, you know, can you assist with that? Are there rental guns available that folks can kind of try and get a feel for maybe what they want to purchase?
Well, we can assist with that. We really don't have a rental gun right now. I have talked to Mike, and there will be one within our future in the next week or two, because we're getting a lot of people that want to come and do it
right.
that don't have the right equipment. So they will be a rental gun, but I have let people shoot my gun at a mile. Once you dial it in and point it and aim it, it's not that complicated for a Maryland out. Once you understand the basic fundamentals of shooting.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we've been promoting it, so I'm going to take a little bit of credit for some of those people coming out there wanting to shoot that.
And,
I mean, and it's a really exciting thing. And, Mike, we appreciate you being on the show with us. And if folks out there listening, I mean, you hear me every week talk about go out to the Clinton House Plantation and shoot the mile. Man, it's a lot of fun, and that's a little different science. Even folks, you know, like myself who are just, I mean, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool deer hunter, but, man, I get excited about the prospect of shooting at long range and, you know, maybe upping my game a little bit on understanding.
Well, right quick before we leave is that, you know, even hunters come out, once they shoot the 1,000-yard or even the mile, then they have confidence if they go out west deer hunting or mule deer hunting or elk hunting, that they could hit that animal at 1,000 yards and have confidence when they do it.
Talk about great training
yeah.
for deer hunters
Absolutely.
To understand a little better.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
It is. Deer hunters are coming in flocks and groves that are going west. Now, a lot of people are getting on the lottery out there, getting those things, mm-hmm. and they go out there and spend that kind of money. They want to make a good shot, you know, so they're getting a lot of training now.
Awesome.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, Mike. Well,
thanks. You know, the good thing about it, let me mention this, is when you come out and hit that mile, we also have a challenge coin that you will get for hitting that mile that you can show your friends that you did that and put that check in your bucket. That's a bucket list item.
I forgot to mention that. You're absolutely right. Absolutely right. So there you go.
Go out there and shoot. Get that coin.
Yep.
That's right.
All right, Mike. Well, thanks for being on the show with us. Great interview. And you folks out there, go see him at the Clinton House.
Awesome.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we're going to go to our break right quick. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of this stuff that's going on with the Department of Natural Resources and get you up to speed on that.
New rules, new laws.
New rules and new laws.
Awesome. Right here, 106.3 WORD.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right. Well, we've been talking about shooting. We've been talking about chronic wasting disease. And just, you know, the official opening of hunting season in my book has always been
dove season.
Dove season.
Yep.
Yep. And saw this. The Department of Natural Resources did a news release. Basically, I mean, everybody kind of knows when, but they really wait for DNR to say, you know, when, whether it's going to be the first
official
week.
Date.
Yeah. So the mourning dove season is going to open on September the 2nd. I'll kind of cover this for you. It's probably still going to be quite warm, like it always is. But
hot.
Yeah, nonetheless, thousands of eager wing shooters will be ready to take the field for the start of the mourning dove season. And that's mourning, MOURNING, dove season in South Carolina. In early September. For many in South Carolina, the opening day of dove season is synonymous with the beginning of fall and all the great outdoor activities that come with it. And if the weather cooperates, this year's birds promise to be plentiful. That's according to the biologist at the Department of Natural Resources. And my buddy Mike Hook says, we just recently completed our annual preseason mourning dove survey. They drove around in our neighborhood.
And looked at, and looking
for
birds.
Doves, you can find doves just hanging out in the neighborhood. And he says the current estimated dove population should provide very good September hunts, provided we have no widespread adverse weather events, meaning
hurricane.
If we don't have a hurricane,
yes,
come and wipe them all out. Now, the opening day of this year's early dove season in South Carolina once again coincide with Labor Day holiday. That's on Monday, September 2nd.
Yep.
DNR has approved all migratory bird seasons in South Carolina for 2019 and 20 based on the federal framework for migratory game birds. They have to do that with doves, and they have to do that with ducks, and they have to do that with woodcock and snipe and all them other things that nobody's ever heard of except for in the lower part of the state. The season's daily bag limits and methods of harvest have been published in the Federal Register by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The daily bag limit for 2019-2020 will again be 15 birds per person a day. Legal shooting time for the early season will begin at 12 noon. If y'all have listened to the show more than a year or two, you know I don't like that one bit.
I know.
I don't like it starting in. I mean, you go out at noon on September 2nd, you're wasting your time.
You just go hang out there and sweat and get a sunburn.
Until about 6 o'clock.
Yes.
I think you ought to be able to come out and hunt first thing in the morning. I would rather see it backwards. I'd rather see you hunt first thing in the morning and then close it for the rest of the day at noon. So people could go pick up the birds and then eat them for lunch and then, you know, go back and do whatever they do. But they didn't ask me. Yeah. Legal shooting hours for the later seasons will begin at a half hour before legal sunrise, and legal shooting times ends at the official sunset during all the season dates.
Yes.
And I think one of the reasons why they did that during the two weekends.
Why do they do that?
This is what people used to do, okay? And, you know, whatever, I mean, I understand, is they would go shoot their limit. I remember when the limit used to be 12 birds. They'd get up in the morning, go out to the dove field, shoot 12 birds, collect them, cook them, okay? Because everybody got
like
their limit.
Traditional.
They cook them. You know, I mean, they'd go off to the side of the field because usually it was down at somebody's farm somewhere, and they'd have a big dove barbecue. And in about time all that was done and you get evening, they'd go back and they'd hunt again.
That kind of sounds fun.
Yeah, but see, what they're doing is they're doubling up on their daily limit.
Yeah, but you can't break the rules cooking them or not.
Well, you know, I'm just saying the way it used to be. If it was up to me, it would be 3 days, shoot everything you can shoot, and that's the end of the season. Because all them late seasons are during deer season.
Lawmaker.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not, they set it on the federal framework. Let's see. So the early season is September the 2nd through September the 7th, 2 to 7. I mean, September 2 to September 7. Yeah. And that's from 12 noon until sunset. And then on September the 8th through October the 12th, it'll be a half hour before sunrise and until sunset.
Legal sunset.
Yeah, and then on November, the third season is November 16th through November the 30th. And then the fourth season is December the 28th through January the 30th. Now, I have in the past hunted that last late season after deer season.
How'd that go?
The birds are completely different. They fly. It's the migratory, mostly what you're going to hunt during that September, that early 3 or 4 day season, is your resident birds. Those are the ones that might be in our backyard, and then they fly over the fence into that field.
I always thought a dove season is being early.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is, but they got four seasons.
Right.
And you know, I'm sort of, I won't say prejudiced, but I don't hunt the mid seasons because it's deer season.
Right.
And a lot of people don't hunt those dove seasons even around places that get deer hunted because people don't want them spooking deer.
Right. Shooting all day.
Yeah.
I can't say as I blame them, you know, on that.
So, like I said, we have buddies of mine and I, we have gone down and you get up during that, you know, whatever, a weekend after deer season's over. You get the shotguns back out, and you go duck hunting in the morning.
Yes.
And then you go hunt.
You duck hunted last year right after deer season was over.
Yeah. And then you hunt doves, you know, that afternoon and, you know, try to make an event of it or whatever. But I don't know. I mean, I guess somewhere, and it's all based on the federal framework anyway, that I don't think they asked too many people in South Carolina. They said, hey, here's your framework.
Here it is. This is what you got.
And then there's also, you know, back in the day, we used to go topso. You know, we go topso, which basically equates to baiting a field.
Which you can't do.
No, you can't do that. You can turn it, but you can't
seed it.
You can't seed it. Well, I tell you, when you did, though, you get doves from all
Are
over.
Are you incriminating yourself on baiting?
No, I know it was this, like I said, this is way back in the day. And I mean, you can still have, if you do a field right, and you can still have a good dove shoot. A lot of that, typically up here, I think we tend to have better early season dove hunts in the upstate than they do in the lower part of the state. They definitely got more grain and agricultural and stuff down there. But if you don't hunt all the fields around an area at the same time, if they don't all get hunted,
you just gonna move birds.
You blow birds over to the next field. Nobody's shooting them over there. They're just gonna all light over there, and you're done.
Yeah.
So
you gotta have a systematic approach to that.
Up here, it's kind of different because you know it's so far between fields. You're gonna collect those doves aren't gonna fly. You know, 10 miles. You know, to the next field. And they tend to, you know.
Doves are delicious, by the way.
They are good. It's dark meat.
We'll have to come up with a good dove recipe coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe we'll put them in, we'll have Captain Morgan dove.
The Captain Morgan is for the quail, not the dove. We'll come up with something different for the dove.
Yeah, I don't know. Jim Beam dove? I don't know.
I don't know
where I can. I don't want to ruin the whole, the whole Roadkill Cafe, but that was just kind of something I came up with, and it turned out to be pretty
We're
good.
We're like junk shopping in the house for something to cook with.
Oh, we got to marinate this stuff with. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Well, there's the music for the first hour. We're going to go to our break and go to the news, and then when we come back, Boat Girl's going to break out the Captain Morgan and tell you how we cooked our quail.
That's right. Right here, 106.3 WORD. Y'all stay with us.
We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.